Government Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, or good morning. Welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. Got a great show lined up for you tonight. First of all, I want to send out the warmest possible happy Thanksgiving wishes for all the listening audience, especially all those folks that sent me emails wishing me and the BBS family the best. And even Middle Yaya sent me an email last night, I guess toward the end of the show. I had my email off, so I didn't read it until after the show, but there's a wish from Middle Yaya to all the BBS listeners, all the Evident Footprints listeners, to have a wonderful, happy Thanksgiving. And I know some folks are still partying because my phone has been ringing off the hook all night from around the country. That said, also special thanks to Nellie, Nancy, oh my goodness, Chris, Ken, and on and on and on. If I haven't mentioned your name, it's just because I've got so many things to cover tonight. But I'll try to do a special show of just thank yous for 2 hours. That's how much email I'm getting from folks. Glad you're enjoying the show. I had a couple of responses regarding the email I read from John in Massachusetts. I think it was on last night's show I read it. And folks are agreeing with what John said. I'm happy to hear that. That means people are waking up. And the one thing that we can do is go out there and do something. It's not going to accomplish anything just to be awake. You've got to do something with what's awakened you. We're going to share some little tidbits of news with tonight's guest rather than my opening with a news item. There's plenty to talk about, and we're going to go down the rabbit hole together as we do, and this is the favorite term of tonight's guest, the rabbit hole. He is a talk show host. He has his own show called The American Awakening, and he's got a website of the same name with a .org on the end, and he is becoming quite a good researcher in the New World Order agenda and even into metaphysics. He will tell you himself that he is becoming more conscious every day, just as the listening audience is. And he is also an estate planner, we could say, and an airline pilot, and a cyclist. And he's got a new ride, he tells me. Maybe he'll talk about that a little bit tonight. And he's also a guitar player and a singer. He writes songs, and he's a good friend. He invited me many times onto his show when he was with RBN, and he's got a new show with Oracle Broadcasting. I'm not clear on what night he is broadcasting. He did mention it was going to be Saturday or Sunday and possibly even both. So we'll clear that up before tonight's show is over. With that, I welcome again to Evident Footprints my good friend, and hopefully yours by now, Michael Herzog. Michael, welcome to the show, and well, happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, and happy Thanksgiving to you. And I have to make a correction here. No, I'm not an airline pilot, but I am a pilot. I have owned a couple of airplanes. Never did get as far as a jet rating, though, no.
Oh, well, airplane pilot.
There we go. Okay. Well, I just wanted to make a quick correction on that. And, yes, I have added motorcyclism to my list of accomplishments. I have gone out and bought a motorcycle police cruiser, and I have to tell the listening audience out there, it's the safest bike on the road because when you get on it and drive down the street, everybody slows down, especially if you wear blue with a helmet on, a white helmet. They have to do a double take, Don, and I have to, you know, it's funny because people do the weirdest things when they see what they think is a police officer, and I've had more fun riding that thing over the last couple of days than I've had in, Lord knows how long. It really is amazing.
Well, if you come up to the Midwest, you got to get one of those gold helmets. That throws them all the time, too.
A gold helmet. Okay.
And just wear your headset, you know, make it look like you've got, you know, the radio.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, Don, I'm venturing out here. I, as you know, I come back to Phoenix here a couple of weeks ago, and I've been doing a lot of research just literally on the economy and what's happened since I left. You know, I left here, I think it was about the end of May of this year, and I did some traveling around, went to Texas. I was in Indiana for a while, went overseas to Europe. And I came back here, and things are a lot different now than they were when I left. Of course, when I left, gas was, I believe I paid $3.89 a gallon for gasoline, and now I just went down to get a cup of coffee here tonight, and it's $1.85. Now, I know there's some places in Arkansas and Texas that are like $1.65, $1.70, but isn't it interesting that that always happens right around the election time, don't you see? And then there's always this debacle that happens. There's always a gas line that breaks or a power plant that blows up. Something happens right around the time where people get ready to take their vacation, and boom, presto, it magically goes back up to $4 a gallon. You know, that's just the way things go. But people, you know, as you said at the beginning of the show, Don, people are waking up. And I've got some interesting tidbits in the research that I've done here. You know, don't let me take over the show here, but I wanted to get this in before you go off. You know, I came back here. I'm sorry?
I was saying you're the guest, so go ahead.
I came back here, and I'm realizing that the housing market has plummeted. You know, I was in the mortgage business for several years here, and I've got many contacts in the mortgage business and appraisers and that sort of thing. So I got in touch with these people, and I'm finding out that the market has gone down in certain areas as high as 40%. And what's happening here is that a lot of people, there are mortgages that are resetting. They're subprime loans that had 2 or 3 years at a certain interest rate, and then after that it adjusts and it goes up, or they have what is called an option loan that, after so long of a time, if they get a negative amortization up to 110%, then it resets and they recalculate the entire mortgage. Well, a lot of people are upside down. A lot of people can't afford their payments. And, of course, we know what happened with our wonderful Secretary of the Treasury, Paulson, where he promised that he was going to take this $700 billion, which, by the way, I believe now has turned into, what is it, 7.4 trillion. I believe it's up to now. And he was going to take this money and he was going to make everything fine. But then he changed his mind 3 or 4 times after they had railroaded Congress into voting for this bailout. And now they've used it to bail out their buddies like AIG, you know, and they haven't really done anything for the homeowners. Well, what's interesting here is I'm finding out that the people, especially a lot of people in the mortgage business, have taken it upon themselves to approach the lenders of the person or the borrower's own bank and do what is called a proposal for loan modification. Which means that the loan officer negotiates with the bank on behalf of the borrower to lower the interest rate, extend the term of the loan, or any combination thereof, to allow the homeowner to stay in the home. And what's interesting is that the banks themselves, a lot of them are in trouble. Some of them, like Indy Mac and Washington Mutual, have been seized by the government. You know, FDIC regulators are running the banks. And they are open to doing this because the government obviously doesn't want to look – I mean, they already look bad. You know, what is the congressional approval, I think, is 9%. George Bush's ratings are like minus 16 or something like that. So we've got this situation where the government really doesn't want to look any worse. They've got enough egg on their face already. So a lot of these lenders, especially the ones that are government regulated now, are actually allowing the loan officers to adjust the mortgages on behalf of the borrower and allow them to stay in their house. And a lot of times the interest rate is dropping 2 or 3 points, extending the rate out and dropping down the amount of the mortgage payments, sometimes as much as half. So that's mm-hmm. good news. That is a solution to a major problem that gives us hope for the future. So I'll shut up and let you talk for a minute. Go ahead.
Well, let me respond to that, because I see something in that is that directly related to what caused this problem in the first place. And I see it as a recycling of the same event, only with clean paper now. You're describing a mortgage lender going to a bank, having them rewrite the agreement with lower points. That generates new paperwork. That generates a new first copy. And when they do that, then they can take that and put that into the derivative markets. Actually, the scam that they were running is they were having the homeowners sign 1, 2, 3 or more copies. And every time they generate a new piece of paper, they can go around to many banks at the same time and do the same thing. So we must be wary of this, because it's more the same thing. Now, that may benefit some people on the short term. However, we must be vigilant to watch this, because you don't be the kind of crooks that these people have been and all of a sudden get clean.
Oh, I agree with you, Don. The only thing that I want to emphasize, however, is we're seeing what's popping up all over this nation. You know, there's an airport right inside of California, Southern California, Ontario, mm-hmm. where there is a homeless, actually they're calling it Tent City, where there's hundreds and hundreds of people who were middle-class homeowners that have lost their homes or walked away from them and now are setting up shop by the airport. Okay, and this is happening all over this country. Well, what the solution that I'm saying, you know, suggesting here that is working, mm-hmm. at least to some degree, is maybe it's only a temporary solace, but it's allowing people to stay in their homes, which otherwise they would not have been able to do. Now, yeah. I'm not sure about your area, but I know that back a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, when I was actively refinancing and doing purchases on homes, there was a multitude of people, you know, through this housing bubble before it had burst, that were coming mm-hmm. over from California with just, they would refinance their loans. You could take up to 100%, sometimes up to 125% of the equity in your home, and their homes were ballooning up like crazy. So they would take a refinance for $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 equity out of their house, and they'd come over here to Arizona, and they'd buy up rental properties. And so this was shooting up the value in the valley here in Arizona. Yeah. And of course, as we know, the bubble has burst, and now, you know, all of the air is seeping out of it. But this is part of what caused the problem. And you're right that the mortgage paper itself that was being bought, the criteria for doing a loan was very, very simple. They were very lax in their qualifications. And then they would take that paper, you know, a $200,000 house, and then they put maybe 100 of those or 200 of those together, bundle it all up and put a cherry on the top, whether it's subprime, alternate A loans, or maybe a few A paper, and they would sell it off to, you know, a county, a city, a state, sometimes a country. They would sell it off to government pension funds. The city of Vallejo, I believe, either almost did or did file bankruptcy over this. The country of Iceland is in bankruptcy, or they're yeah. seeking help from Russia. So this is created a worldwide crisis. But Don, I want to point out that this is by design here. Remember, mm-hmm. they did this on a national scale in 1929. The Great Depression of 29 was organized, and it was premeditated. Well, yeah. this crisis again is organized, is premeditated. Only this time, it's on a worldwide scale to bring forth a global government. And we see this happening with our new Führer getting ready to take office, Barack Obama. And some of the comparisons that I was making with Zbigniew Brzezinski, some of the quotes in his three books, and Barack Obama, which we know is handled by Brzezinski,
is basically spinning the same quotes and putting, you know, again, that tying that little bowl around it, putting a cherry on the top, icing on the cake, to propagandize people into going along with this new world order or global government, call it what you will. So, yeah, it's a big picture. Go ahead. You can talk now.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I'm
very
sorry.
Much.
I just had a cup of coffee, and now I'm going.
Thank you.
Yeah,
we love
you're welcome. Go ahead. You've got 30 seconds now.
The reason I point this out is because if anyone is approached or finds out that they can approach such a solution to a problem they may have, where they're on the verge of foreclosure, you want to make sure you avoid signing more than one piece of paper. And the reason for that is, as I stated, that that the game has been that that's exactly what they've done. They've duplicated and triplicated the paper so that they can present this as it's a new deal, a clean deal in and of itself, when in reality they have the same paper out there two or three times, and one piece of collateral backing three.
In different packages of CDOs, yeah, collateralized debt obligations.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Now, go ahead.
I was going to say, Carl Pearson, the attorney from New York who has been on my show a number of times, has recommended that if people are in default or they see that they're in a month or two, they're not going to be able to make their mortgage payments, stop. Don't make the payment. Contact him, and he will tell you what to do.
Right. The same thing with me. And matter of fact, I'm putting that up on the website. Do not walk away from your home. And make sure that you call a professional that knows how to deal with these people. Now, back when I was in the mortgage business, I used to do negotiations with banks on behalf of the mortgage company or the broker, and basically bailing loan officers out of trouble. but I've done a lot of behind the scenes work. So this gentleman that you had on your show is right. Don't walk away from your home. Okay, contact a professional first that is able to negotiate. Because here's the thing, Don, is that if you go yourself and try to negotiate, it's just like hiring an intercessor, such as an attorney if you're in a criminal trial. You walk into a criminal trial and you're representing yourselves 99.9% of the time, you're going down unless you know exactly what you're doing. Same thing with this, is that you need to hire an intercessor that can go in and negotiate without any emotion involved on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the fact that if a professional has to expound on or elaborate or, dare I use the word, even exaggerate to a small degree your situation, you cannot be held responsible. However, if you go in and do that and they catch you doing that, now you've got a serious problem. You see?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that being said, yeah, go ahead.
Well, that's good news. And I'm not discounting what you say. I just throw that little caveat out there so people are careful when they should do this. Now, in light of what's going on with the finances, let's move to oil for a moment. The price of oil. Isn't it interesting that oil has come down to almost, well, let's say it's come down to about a third of what it was just a month or so ago, and we haven't seen the price come down to a third of what it was. Notice that.
Sure, and that is precisely dead on Lindsey Williams' prediction that he made 6 months ago, which I thought was outrageous at the time, when oil was $137 a barrel. He said it was going to go down to $50 a barrel.
Now he's saying 40.
Now he's saying 40.
Now he's saying 40. In fact, I just heard an interview this evening that he did with a certain talk show host that you and I have a great distaste for, but nonetheless, he was on that show.
And
today. Yeah, and at least it was aired today. Yeah, I'm pretty sure because the information was up to date. Now, you know, I make predictions from time to time, and I haven't really been doing that a whole lot, but I've made some about the banks and. To a T, in order, as if I had the list in front of me, the predictions have come true. As quick as 4 days or as far back as several months. And these are directly related to Wantagate, so it's pretty easy. It's I'm just following the cookie cutter technique of where the money went to the banks and in what order. And after the the Bear Stearns debacle, Lehman Brothers had an issue directly related to my research. I've seen indications that Lehman's going to go down, and that became reality. That was predicted by me on the show. And also I made a couple of predictions on Greg Evenson's show. Then I singled out the latest ones, and of course some people are saying Bank of America. I said watch Citibank. Citibank is the second most powerful bank. They have assets of, they say, $2.05 trillion, yet they're illegally holding $14 trillion. Remember that, okay? So is it a coincidence that they're going to go down? And if the second most powerful bank in the country is going down and they have over $2 trillion in assets, what about all the banks underneath them?
Well, now Bank of America is third, and I did see a snippet tonight that Bank of America is on that list. And also, they had been buying up, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but did they not buy up Washington Mutual?
Yes.
They're buying up all of this bad paper. Well, there's nobody sitting behind the scenes waiting to bail them out, because the money that went into the bailout went to the other friends, if you will. So we've got Washington Mutual, we've got IndyMac, can't forget them. Bank of America is on the line there. Lehman Brothers went down. So continue. Where is your?
Well, first of all, they're telling us they went down. Do we really have an indication of that? We don't know that. That's just the story. But the reason is they intend to federalize all these banks. In fact, Bank of America is intended to be the central bank, and they will be based out of North Carolina. Mark my words on that. I predicted Wachovia also. Wachovia had the same problems. And of course, a lot of what I've been researching lately ties into Countrywide Mortgage. And there's another company that I'm not going to name right now. But I'm now seeing a pattern where all the judges and attorneys around the country, even down to the local level, are involved in these scams. And trust me when I say that, folks. And Michael, you know my research. When I come out with something like I'm talking about, I've hit the nail on the head. And I can pinpoint many other areas besides Chicago and Maricopa County, Arizona, which we've discussed on many shows. So there's all hell going to break loose over the real estate scams that are going on. I can tell you, in the nutshell, what is happening is they are putting up publicly owned property for private investments, which are in these pure trusts assigned to these bankers and attorneys and certain business people in the smaller towns. It's going to outrage people when they find out about this. And they can't stop it. They can't stop the investigation. There's too many people that know what I know. So,
well, there's a lot of people right now that are outraged already. And I mentioned to you before we came on the air, Don, and doing my research, not only with the housing market, but I was mentioning, you know, I'm now the proud owner of a motorcycle police cruiser. But rampant across this valley, we're looking, you know, I'm looking on Craigslist or Auto Trader. I'm looking at the job market or whatever. There's just nothing to be found. And what is to be found, people are just unloading because they cannot pay their mortgage. They can't buy their groceries. They're losing their jobs left and right. So, yes, they are outraged. Now, I've spoken to a few people that are still, you know, the people are still in denial. You know, human nature causes us to want to be optimistic and try to be happy. And mm-hmm. So people are still trying to grasp that attitude. Well, you can't continue to hold on to that tree limb, if you will, unless there's some element of hope and solutions. And mm-hmm. This is why I say I'm very optimistic about this loan modification solution. But also, this is a domino effect, because we're going into the commercial markets now. A little snippet here that I picked off about not just the personal, you know, your personal mortgages, but also commercially, bank malls are starting to go down. Michigan, Texas, and Florida, and California, and they go shorter term loans. You know, they go 5, 7, 10 years with usually a balloon payment at the end, and these people are not being able to afford to pay their mortgages. Well, that causes a domino effect with the economy as a whole, because where are these people going to go shop? I mean, is Walmart the only thing left? You know, it's obviously not only considering the loss of jobs here that you have. So, yeah, we are in a crisis, but there's also room to turn this thing around. But we go back to square one, Don, and that is waking people up to make them realize what the problem is. And there's always opportunity, even on a downturn like this. Just as I said, you know, this motorcycle cruiser I bought it for one third of what it's worth. So, you know, there's homes out there. If a person comes to town with, you know, any significant type of money, there are deals all over the place to be found.
Yeah.
So that being said, I'm trying to be optimistic here because I have a whole lot of negative stuff in front of me. And last time you reprimanded me, slapped my hands because I was being so negative on your program.
I talk about negative stuff all the time, but the idea is eventually, you know, to wake up and realize this is going on, whether you want to acknowledge it or not. Now, what are we going to do about it? Because there's a lot of happiness to be found in the solutions, too. And we know these people don't intend to provide us with solutions, so we've got to be able to do that ourselves.
That's the key. That's the key, is us finding the solutions. Now, that being said, no, it's Thanksgiving, Don. All right. So I want to read a little snippet from Michael Rivero, if you would be so kind as to acknowledge and you know, bear with me here. You know, Thanksgiving is a time to be thankful. And obviously, you know, we're all thankful for our family and our health and so forth. But we're much poorer this year than last, thanks to the government. Taxes are high. The services are low. You know, a lot of people we know are dead in a war started with lies that our grandchildren are expected to make the payments on. Now, why should anybody be thankful for that? Our nation hovers at the edge of ruin because the government decided to help out the poor, suffering corporations by giving them tax credits to make it easier to send American jobs to other countries, forcing Americans to take lower-paying jobs, thereby triggering the debt crisis. Are we thankful for that? No, I don't think so. Then the government decides to fix the credit crisis by taking $700 billion away, which is turned into what now, Don? $7.4 trillion, away from the working class and give it to the banks so that the banks could turn around and loan it back to us at more interest. Except that didn't work out that way. The banks and Wall Street just shoved the cash into their golden parachutes. Well, can we thank them a whole bunch for that one? The so-called bailout, Don, now stands, according to this writing, is $8.2 trillion, a staggering sum of money, so large that most people can't even comprehend it. So it works out to be, Don, about $100,000 per U.S. household, plus the accruing interest. Now, no way should anyone, except the corporations getting the cash, be thankful for that. And here we are today, Thanksgiving, with a false flag operation leading to an invasion of Pakistan, which I hope we're going to talk about here in a few minutes, Don, in the fond hopes that with a bloody war to distract us, we won't remember how badly the United States government has screwed up this country. Now, no doubt our leaders are betting the farm that a new world war will get the nation out of a financial mess, just like it did in 1929. Remember, I remind you, that was a domestic thing that happened in the United States, but now they're doing it on a worldwide scale. I don't think it's going to work this time. Now, in the World War Big Mistake 1 and Big Mistake 2, World War II, the U.S. was the mighty manufacturing power, but this time we're not. And so if the United States starts World War III, we're going to ultimately lose. So should we be thankful? I don't think so. Nobody's that much of a schmuck. But that being said, let's go into, Don, and talk about this latest event. I would call it a false flag event, and I'm sure you will too, that happened over here. What's the name of that place? I can't even pronounce it.
Mumbai.
Who?
Mumbai in India.
Mumbai. Okay, Mumbai in India. Yes, okay. Now, We had a terrorist attack over there, right? We would have killed 101 people, I believe. Is that right?
It's up this morning. It was up to 125, and there were 300 and some injured. So the numbers are they're going to keep climbing until they land on that magical Illuminati number,
which is.
Oh, well, who knows? But it'll work out to an 11 or a 13, most likely.
Oh, okay.
Or a 6.
Yeah, what's interesting, and now Reuters, you know, a little snippet out of Reuters, and I'll read this to you, and I'm going to let you expound on this a little bit and give us your knowledge and research on this. But Reuters stated that at least 80 people had been killed, and that an organization calling itself the Dekan Mujahideen claimed it was behind the attacks. Now, CNN television is already stating the fact that the Mumbai attacks were funded and supported by foreign sources implicating Pakistan. What a coincidence. Where President-elect Obama promised to take the so-called war on terrorism. And let us not forget that supposedly Osama bin Laden is hiding in Pakistan. All right? Now, remember Obama promised to take the so-called war on terrorism when he assumes office in January. The attacks, which are ongoing at this moment, set the stage for redeployment of United States troops from Iraq to Pakistan, as Obama promised George Bush. Isn't that a coincidence? Does this not reek of another false flag operation, Don?
Yeah. Well, let's step back a moment. Is it my turn now?
All right, I'll shut up for 20 minutes. Go ahead.
No. It was during the campaign, during the presidential campaign, and Obama started making these speeches all over the world, really. I hate the word globe. He went over to Pakistan. He was in Germany. I think he was in France, England, and who knows where else. But while he was in Pakistan, I smelled a rat right there. And I warned, and my listening audience will verify this, that I said, watch out for something to take place in India, because Obama is in Pakistan, and they're mortal enemies with India. At least that's what they project to the public. They have to have bad guy, good guy, two nuclear powers at each other's throats all the time. And I recall hearing Obama's campaign promises, and that's all they are promises. They're not intentions. And let's not mention the fact that he's not an American citizen. Let's not forget that, but let's not mention it. And then so saying I did. The very fact that he's over there, what is he negotiating, okay? There's obviously something being planned. So this whole thing reeked of a CIA operation, or CIA, MI6, Mossad, definitely. Israel is involved in this because it's going to foment the type of hatred against the Arabs that will provoke something happening in Iran. Now, there have been so many dissenting generals in terms of attacking Iran and who have been fired, basically. They've lost their jobs and have been replaced. Now they're going after economic attacks on them. And the way they're going to do this, and this ties back to what you were talking about, Lindsey Williams, the Arabs who have been trying to keep their oil prices high, they don't want it to go down below 150. In fact, they'd prefer it goes up to at least 160 a barrel. They're artificially holding their price up with the intention of milking this money out of us, because they see how much Congress is able to get away from the people illegally, but nonetheless, that word is going around the world. And the Arabs gave $6.2 trillion along with the Queen of England. I don't know what their exact amounts were, their shares, but $6.2 trillion was given to Citibank. That's part of that $14 trillion sitting in Citibank. Don't be surprised if the amount of money doesn't approach or equal $14 trillion before all of this is over. That they're literally using that money, they're holding that money hostage, and they're going to try to destroy the Arabs financially. Now, is it any coincidence that this is supposedly a Muslim terrorist group that attacked India? And it's kids, from what I've heard. They're all young kids. So this was very well planned. It was very well funded, as you rightly pointed out. And it's intended to get that skirmish going, or skirmish, so that it takes the attention away from what's going on with Iran, and it weakens the Arabs' position in oil. Don't forget, too, that OPEC is not just Arab countries, that the United States actually belongs to OPEC. And this was all originally a design of George H.W. Bush. So it's no surprise. If you connect the dots and if you remember all of these things, you can even see what they're happening. I could see that happening. I could see this very scenario happening when Obama went over to Pakistan. And he's not even an American. He's working for the same people that are playing these roles, and he's working for Russia at the same time,
mm-hmm.
His Rockefeller connections.
Well, now let me throw a couple other things into the mix, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Don. Well, number one, Secretary of Treasury Henry Paulson, interestingly enough, made a trip over to India last October 2007, and I find that interesting that they took such an avid interest in India about a year ago. But also added to this, you know, the Indian Prime Minister says the Mumbai militants were based outside the country. Well, how convenient. Of course they're based outside the country because they don't want us in there. So, yeah, they're going to say they're trying to blame it. CNN and all the mainstream corporate media is trying to blame this on the phony Al-Qaeda.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Also,
they did that yesterday. Yes.
Let us now correct me if I'm wrong on this one, but is it not true that Musharraf was ousted out of Pakistan, which left a kind of a black hole there, and we don't have the control because Musharraf was our puppet. We mm-hmm. don't have the control over there that we do now, so we have to have an excuse to go back in there.
Well, remember the CIA took out Bhutto too.
Oh, Benazir Bhutto.
Yeah, or Bhutto, yeah.
Right, yeah, because during that chaos that was happening last year, there was an election, and she was poised to win that election, so they took her out.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, I remember that.
So these are not accidents. You see, if you connect the dots and remind yourself that these things happened, you can see what they're headed for. So why should we be surprised? Why should we even allow them to do this?
Well, Don, let me ask you, because I've given thought to this. We've got this President-elect Obama coming in, and what's really scary is that I see all of these people are still the American people that are either in denial or they're just so mind-numb, dumbed down from drinking too much fluoride or whatever, that they actually believe that this guy is going to do something. Now, we know by him appointing Rahm Emanuel as the chief of staff that they are indeed going to invoke mandatory servitude. They're talking civil servitude by our sons and daughters from age 18 to 25 is what they say. I believe it's going to be more like 18 to 34, to basically set us up into a snitch police state. And, you know, you've got, on the one hand, you've got domestically, the only thing that's even artificially propping up our economy right now is this, you know, never-ending perpetual war. They have to find somebody else to attack because, let's face it, Iraq is getting old, okay? And then speaking of Iraq, you know, Nouri al-Maliki just signed the paperwork to, that the United States, they agreed to allowing the troops to stay there for 3 more years and then they're leaving. And everybody's, you know, clapping their hands going, okay, oh, it's only 3 more years, now we have a deadline. But what the American public does not know is that if he would not have signed that agreement, we were already scheduled to be out of there by December 31st. Did you know that?
Yeah, I'm aware of that. But, you know, they're just buying more time like everything else. Their interest is, maybe they have it calculated that it's going to take 3 years to destroy the Arab oil business and push them out of the market. But the Arabs will turn to Russia. Russia will once again become this Cold War threat, and we'll start something up with Russia again. It's really what I see going on. You have to look a few steps ahead, but we had indication of that on August the 8th, opening day of the Olympics, when they pulled the stunt in in Soviet Georgia, former Soviet Georgia, I should say, in Ossetia.
Right, so, South Ossetia.
Yeah, yeah. So it's quite evident what they're doing. All anyone has to do is look at what they're doing, ask yourself the question, why? We were even warning about this when there was so much discussion about the potential of the flu pandemic, and that they were intending to use the Olympics as a staging event for the vaccinations. Well, they're doing it through professional sports right now. They're getting their flu shots. So you can ask any professional athlete, ask a basketball player if he's gotten his flu shots. They've all gotten them.
Well, we live in a throwaway society, and everything is so convenient. We have more fast food places in this country than any other country on earth, and they've got it down to an art now where you just had a friend of mine last year that was calling me up bragging to me that he just drives up to a drive-up window and gets his flu shot. And I'm shaking my head in astonishment because he has no idea.
At a fast food place.
No, it wasn't at a fast food place. I'm talking about a drive-up, whatever it is. You know, whether it's a pharmacy or whether it's a clinic or whatever it is. But you drive up to a window, you roll up your sleeve, and they give you the shot right there while you're in your car, for crying out loud. You know, here, let us give you some thimerosal here right now, you know, with a cancer virus or two in it, and then drive along your way. But, you know, to try to instill – well, I'll give you an example. I had a conversation with an individual today. And I was appalled to hear this person tell me that they liked Rahm Emanuel. And, you know.
For what reason?
but here's the thing. That statement is as absurd as a statement that I heard by a borrower last year saying, well, you know, we got to support Israel. And as soon as you ask them why, their eyes glaze. They don't have a clue. They're programmed to say that by their favorite pundit on TV who's telling them how to think. And and I continually see this happen, Don. Now, I haven't been out much lately other than doing my research and so forth, but I've been out, you know, going to the health club and so forth, talking to this person or that person. And in certain areas I see that there's the blinders are starting to come off. But in other areas, people are still as blind as they have been 6-7 years ago. They know something's wrong. They just don't know what. They don't know how to fix it. Instead of taking the initiative to get off their hind end and go research it for themselves and get active, they put their faith in their false hopes of Barack Obama and change. And they go back to sleep. That's what happened here. And now we've got Obama that's appointing his chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, I believe the Secretary of State now. They're replacing Condoleezza Rice with Hillary Clinton.
Did I pick the right title for my article, The Three Stooges? She's still in the mix, and I said
So we've still got Moe and Larry. Okay, Larry. Curly's by the wayside with his new girlfriend Sarah Palin. Which, by the way, what happened to her? Is she still on the circuit somewhere?
No idea. It's come out that she's really Jewish. it just doesn't end. But I've got more stuff on Obama too. I've got some really good stuff. I don't know if I think it's since you were last on the show. I've come up with some really revealing stuff.
Well, let's touch on that for a minute. As far as Obama's concerned with his illegitimacy of even being qualified to run for president, being born in Kenya and so forth, and there are other people coming out now filing lawsuits against him. Now, we've still got a little bit of time between now and the inauguration. Do you foresee anything happening between now and then? And if so, what? And
well, the delegates cast their votes on December 15th. So we have until December 15th to do something. And they're pretty concerned about it because there's now a YouTube video out that shows exactly what's fraudulent about the certificate of live birth. It's a totally fictitious document. Now, why would someone do a Photoshop and a graphics alteration of a genuine document. There's no reason for it other than it's not a genuine document. So that we have to demand that that is addressed. That specificity of the issue. Forget about what the media is saying about it. The media saying it doesn't make it so. And I am part of the media, but I'm also an investigative journalist. And if you just go by the things that I have written about, there's enough reason right there to disqualify the guy. Period. And
okay.
I'm not the only one that's uncovered anything. Jerome Corsi has, Andy Martin has, and a host of other people who have examined documents and traveled around the world or gone down the rabbit hole and brought this stuff up. You know, we were given this story, if I can digress just for a moment here, that they were the grandparents are from Kansas, and his mother is from Kansas. And I even alluded to the fact that she probably wasn't even his mother. And more evidence has come out that she wasn't pregnant in July of 1961, what would have been the third trimester, that there's bathing suit beach photos taken of her. There's a series of nude photos that were taken. Now, these would have had to have been taken prior to her becoming impregnated or after her becoming impregnated. Now a news story surfaces that she was enrolled in the University of Washington and didn't go to Hawaii for some time after her parents went there. So she couldn't have even met Barack Obama in the time period that they claim, which means that she was given the baby, which is what I concluded in my article, that her appearance in Seattle, Washington showed that she had a dissociation with the baby. You wouldn't feed the baby and ask, and we're talking about a newborn baby, and ask a friend to change the diaper. No mother on the planet would do that. Stanley Ann Dunham supposedly did, according to Maxine Box and Susan Blake, two former schoolmates of hers, whose phone numbers happen to be disconnected all of a sudden. I've got research that shows, and I've got a picture of her in kindergarten in Oklahoma City. In 1949 through 1951, she went to school in Oklahoma City. It's quite unusual for people born and raised in Kansas to jump to another state. Her parents were working for the CIA. There are CIA files on the whole family, on the grandparents, on the mother. And I said they worked for the CIA in my articles. And now this is being corroborated with a witness. With a witness that went to school with Stanley Ann Dunham in Oklahoma City. So why put out the story that they're from Kansas if they're not? In fact, her father is reported to be from Chicago and Lebanon. Lebanon, okay? So this is not a Kansas family we're talking about. Dorothy Gale still owns the rights to Kansas.
So what going back here for a moment, or is it forward? At any rate, there was a prediction made, and I can't remember whether it was Joe Biden or whether it was Colin Powell. One of them said there was going to be a significant event within the 6 months after the election. The other one said there was going to be a significant event January 22nd or 23rd.
Biden said that.
Okay, so that being said, now there was also speculation and the possibility that Obama would be assassinated shortly after the inauguration, but also, I mean, and I thought about this, is that it is possible that they may allow this to come out, although not likely, that yes, indeed, they, you know, the proof is irrefutable that he was born in Kenya, consequently can't be president of the United States. Joe Biden steps in and takes over. Joe Biden is an admitted Zionist, and there you go. Now, another snippet.
I think there's a constitutional issue. Is a person who is not a citizen of the United States qualified to nominate who he wants as his vice president when he has no business being there in the first place? We're treating this as if they're already in office. You understand? He's the president-elect and the vice president-elect, but this whole thing was a scandal. And if that comes out, Larry Sinclair's story's got to come out, and Biden's in a lot of hot water at that point. And you know all about that. You've done shows on that yourself.
Well, I've had Larry Sinclair on my program, and I have no doubt that Larry Sinclair is telling the truth. He has no reason to lie. He also took a lie detector test. He spoke at a press conference on June the 18th in which he was arrested, as I'm sure most of your listeners are aware. And he was arrested by none other than Beau Biden, the Attorney General for the state of Delaware, who's Joe Biden's son. And so mysteriously, you know, in between June 18th and the time that Larry Sinclair's charges were mysteriously all dropped, Joe Biden gets nominated for the vice presidency. So what's up with that?
And they send Beau Biden to Iraq. So why? So nobody can question him? You know, it's a theater of war.
Wait a minute, Beau Biden, the Attorney General for the state of Delaware, they sent to Iraq?
That he was supposed to have, either he enlisted or he was already in the military and was appointed to go to Iraq. Yes, I know I read this.
That's news to me. I didn't know that. That being said, that's even more convenient. Now, also, you know, going down this road a little bit further, I uncovered another snippet article that I pulled up off Rens.com. It's called "The Cabal's New Strategy." Now, this strategy ties in with Barack Obama being, you know, remaining in there, going through all of this controversy and so forth, you know, taking his inaugural pledge to support the Constitution, yada, 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 you know, on January 20th. But the people that are pulling the strings behind the scenes are putting a smiling face on the same old, same old. We had George Bush that came in with the Patriot Act, Military Commission Act, John Warner Defense Bill, some of the most reprehensible executive orders that have ever been signed in the history of the office of president, and to the point where he is reviled. He is literally hated by the large majority of Americans. So what do? We bring in this very eloquent, classy, well-spoken gentleman that is 180 degrees bipolar from George Bush. So human nature has it that everybody's going to say, oh, this man has got to be good. He's got to be different because they're going to subconsciously tie in bad with the demeanor of George Bush, the executive orders that he passed, the legislation that he signed, reprehensible legislation. To where they have this gentleman now that is very, again, very well-spoken, very literate, and he has the appearance of, or shows the illusion of, a guy that you could talk to, a guy that is reasonable, a gentleman that, is supposedly looking out for the people. And I have to say, as far as the spin that he puts on, the message he conveys, Don, he's as good, if not better, than Bill Clinton was.
Yeah, but he's following a script, because as soon as he's in a one-on-one live situation and doesn't have a prepared answer, he trips all over himself. He begins shape-shifting, actually.
Well, you won't get an argument out of me there, but that being said, you know, any time that they have an appearance where they're behind a podium in public, the security is so high that nobody gets in there that's able to ask them a question. All of the questions are scripted. All of the questions are read beforehand. You will not find anybody even getting close enough to ask a question, not within earshot of being able to ask a question to any of these people, because they're so tightly scrutinized. And again, they're giving the illusion on the corporately owned, controlled mainstream media that these are just randomly off-the-cuff questions, and they're not, and we know they're not. But, you know, this man has created an illusion, which is, as you know, Don, that's all this is. This entire facade that they call the American government is an illusion. The shadow government is what runs this country. It's what runs our military, and that's the people pulling the strings, the international banks, the cabal. Okay, but we've got this guy here that is literally, correct me if you disagree, totally bipolar from George Bush. And George Bush had his moments on behind the podium where, we actually were scratching our head wondering what kind of a moron he could be.
And this is the final blow. I mean, you know, this is the move to totalitarianism, to a fascist communist state. Obama's so-called mother was a student of Marx at not just Mercer Island High School, but wherever she went, they were groomed by the Rockefellers. It's obvious that there's a Rockefeller tie there. So the Rockefellers are pulling strings. You can say bankers. It goes much deeper than that. The foundations he's tied to, the terrorist organizations he's tied to, even William Ayers and the Weathermen played a role in the writing of his book. William Ayers has been determined to be the author of the book by four different software companies that do analysis, speech and written analysis of speech patterns, you know,
I know, but I want to, what's interesting about Barack Obama, we know one of his handlers is Zbigniew Brzezinski, okay? And I want to read a couple of excerpts here, because Barack Obama is expert at taking what his handler said, specifically in his book, Zbigniew Brzezinski's book, Second Chance, and spinning it around, saying the same thing in essence, okay, but mm-hmm. making it palpable for the consumption of the American public. Now, give me a minute here. Let me share this with you and your listening audience, Don, okay? Okay? All right, this is...
Okay, clock's running.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
All right.
Clock's running.
All right. Zbigniew Brzezinski, quote out of his book, Second Chance. Americans must recognize that their patterns of consumption will soon collide head-on with increasingly impatient egalitarian aspirations. Now, whether through the exploitation of natural resources, excessive energy consumption, indifference to global ecology, or the exorbitant size of houses for the well-to-do, indulgent self-gratification at home conveys indifference to the persisting deprivations of much of the world. Now, just try to imagine a world in which 2.5 billion Chinese and Indians consume as much energy per capita as Americans do. That reality the American public has yet to assimilate. To lead, America must not only be sensitive to global realities, it must be socially attractive, and that calls for a broader national consensus in favor of correcting the key failings of the American social model. Now, that's what Zbigniew Brzezinski said in his book, Second Chance. Barack Obama, at a campaign stop in Oregon, here's what he stated. He said, and I quote, "We can't drive our SUVs and eat as much as we want and keep our home on 72 degrees at all times and then just expect that other countries are going to say, okay, that's not leadership. That's not going to happen," he added. "If India and China's carbon footprint gets as big as ours, we're gone." In essence, he said the same thing as his handler said. He just spun it around to make it palpable for the American people. And he's done that time and time and time and time again throughout his campaign.
But they prepare, the point I'm making, Michael, is they prepare those words for him. All he's capable of doing on his own is lying. And he's not even good at that. He's consistent, but he's not good at it, because a successful liar is going to fool the people. Now, you can say, well, look at all the people that were fooled. Don't think that this election wasn't as corrupt as the primaries, because it was. And it's quite possible that McCain, and I'm not, I have the same issue with McCain. He's not an American either. It was obvious in the primaries that Ron Paul was excluded, that his votes were just thrown in the garbage, literally,
but
not just figuratively.
But Don, let's dissect the election for a moment. Here you've got, and I just mentioned this a few moments ago, you've got this guy that you scratch your head was a borderline moron, but he really wasn't, okay, who passed reprehensible executive orders and legislation. Then you put some guy like Barack Obama, who is eloquent, up against John McCain, who subconsciously gives the same faction of moronism that George Bush did. So when mm-hmm. they went into, because they had to get past the racial thing of going into the voting booth and voting black or white against their conscience, because like it or not, there's a lot of people that really have underlying racial issues, if you know what I mean. Okay? So they had to get past that. And they did that by putting another buffoon, you know, close to George Bush as they could get, up against a guy who was a very eloquent speaker. Very, you know, very well-dressed, very classy, well-spoken. And this is part of the psychology.
And neuro-linguistically programmed.
Right, and this is part of the psychology which got them to vote, you know, got the majority of the vote. Now, they couldn't have gone back and rigged another election. I don't think the American people would have put up with that. But they got away with it this time by very clever psychology and distinct planning. And they did a very good job of it. But what have we got here? We've got more of the same. We've just put a different face on the same turd. You see?
Well, yeah. And now, the media played their role in making sure that every time they talked about Barack Obama, what his supporters said was favorable, and they didn't allow any dissension. No dissension came out until after the election. Fox started it right away. Now, there are, on the internet, all you hear is, what is this change that's supposed to take place? Have you heard that on mainstream at all? What the change is going to be? No, it's a word. It sounds good, and he never described it. Now you're seeing, you've got half of a Clinton administration in there, which by making Hillary Clinton the Secretary of State, she has diplomatic immunity from the criminal prosecution for all the trillions of dollars that she and her husband and the Bushes stole on an international basis. This is why this is going on. So, I don't mean to sound like I'm going off on another tangent. While we're being fed this image of a guy who's not even an American, and he's not even black, he looks like he's black. That's as far as it goes. I'm convinced of that. So, you know, it's just propaganda. It's all propaganda. And what they show us, all the American people are for him. Well, yeah, there are a lot of people, I'll agree, there are a lot of dumbed-down, asleep sheeple that voted for the guy. Whether their vote got counted as they made it or not is another issue. They had to make sure he won. They were neck and neck. And in many cases, McCain was points ahead of him the day before the election. And the next day, it's a landslide. Tell me how that happens. How does that happen? Their scientific polling must have been askew. Or they got the black people to go out and vote.
So from your discerning perspective, you believe that the vote was again rigged?
Absolutely. Every election for probably the past 100 years has been rigged.
Okay, but and you could very well be right. But they had to make it look, they couldn't afford to go through what they went through back in 2000 when they basically stole it. They ran the coup d'etat.
They did it in a different way. You didn't hear about hanging chads for once. We're on at the end of our first hour here, Michael. Let's take a short break.
Okay.
And we'll pick this up when we come back. You're listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and we'll be right back with our special guest, Michael Herzog. Happy Thanksgiving.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Storable food. Storable food. HempUSA.org has an inexpensive, nutritionally dense, high-frequency food. Hemp, known around the world, will boost your immune system and increase energy levels. Detoxifies the body and reduces junk food cravings. Burns fat and builds muscle. And is easy to digest, non-allergenic, and gluten-free. Can be made into smoothies, breads, muffins, pancakes, cookies, you name it. The entire planet should make this a staple food in your diet. The seeds will square the colon wall. The powder will feed the body vital minerals. The oil will clean the arterial walls and feed the brain. Try our powder, seed, and oil today. Call 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org. That's 908-691-2608 at hempusa.org. Remember, vacuum packaging this food will have at least a 5-year shelf life stored in a cool, dark, dry place. Holidays are coming, and this would make a perfect gift for friends and family. Call today, 908-691-2608 at hempusa.org. And remember, let your food be your medicine, and your medicine be your food.
Soon they two were wed. This made my dad's son-in-law and changed my very life. For my daughter was my mother, cause she was my father's wife. To complicate the matter, even though it brought me joy, I soon became the father of a bouncing baby boy. My little baby then became a brother-in-law to dad, and so became my uncle, though it made me very sad. For if he was my uncle, then that also made him brother to the widow's grown-up daughter, who of course was my stepmother. I'm my own grandpa. I'm my own grandpa. It sounds funny, I know, but it really is so. Oh, I'm my own grandpa. My father's wife then had a son who kept him on the run. And he became my grandchild because he was my daughter's son. My wife is now my mother's mother, and it makes me blue. Because although she is my wife, she's my grandmother too. If my wife is my grandmother, then I am her grandchild. And every time I think of it, it nearly drives me wild.
This has got to be the strangest thing I ever saw.
As husband of my grandmother, I am my own grandpa. I'm my own grandpa.
Everybody!
I'm my own grandpa. It's so funny, and I know, but it really is so.
Hey!
I'm my own grandpa.
Welcome back to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest this evening on Thanksgiving 2008, Mr. Michael Herzog. Michael, the lyrics in that song make more sense than Barack Obama.
I was just going to ask you, where in the world you ever got such a ridiculous song? You can't even follow it. I'm trying to follow, you know, the genealogy there,
and I'm literally turning myself inside out, trying to, you know, follow this guy. I have to slow it down to 16 and a third or something like that. The old.
But it makes sense. It does.
Well, if you're able to think that fast at midnight, you know, I don't know. I mean, it is interesting, but I'd have to listen to it three or four times and, you know, take notes as I go along. I don't know.
Yeah, this is sort of our genealogy anthem. It's become.
Well, who is this guy?
You know, I know the name, and it's slipped my memory for the time being. But
you know,
I'll have.
You know who he sounds like, Don? He sounds a little bit like, who is the guy that sang One-Eyed, One-Horned, Flying Purple People Eater?
Well, I remember the song, but I'm less likely to come up with the...
I think it was the guy that was, it was Rory Storm or something like that. It came out just before the Beatles. You know, he was an Englishman.
Yeah.
But that was, it's along that same line, anyway. Yeah. All right, so anyway, that's off topic. So... Are we still talking about our new Führer here?
Well, what we're doing here is we're just pointing out all of these inconsistencies and then connecting the dots with all the false flag events that are going on.
Well,
you know,
right.
Keep in mind, you know, Henry Kissinger's name hasn't really been popping up very much yet. He's the guy that I think is controlling Brzezinski. Ultimately, you know, we've got to look at who the controllers of the shadow government are, really, to discern what's going on here. And that takes us into the whole other late night topic that we all love to talk about, the reptilians.
Well, can I throw a couple of snippets in here first? For the sake of the listening audience who might think that there's, you know, any of the most, you know, the smallest minute hope that there really is a change, I want to read a couple of snippets here. The old brand, then this is under Barack Obama, the old brand of global militaristic imperialism will continue, but now it's going to have a new amiable facade. Fascism and imperialism with a friendly face. And this is why Obama was chosen, because he is a master at pretending to be an agreeable guy. Now, the reason for the good-natured mask is that W and the neocons pushed the world into a dangerous, reactive hatred for the United States, and the cabal now needs to pretend to be playing nice. Also, the old brand of predatory capitalism will continue, but will now pretend to be sensitive to economic and social inequities worldwide. That, along with the old brand of domestic tyranny, and pay close attention to this one, Don, the old brand of domestic tyranny, devastation of constitutional liberties, will continue, but citizen awareness and agitation will be blunted by creating a new domestic civilian army. Yes, even civil rights came to be seen by some as an impediment to effective national security. That's why he's going to impose this mandatory civilian army, you will, between the ages of 18 and 25. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, we can go to the reptilians. Go ahead.
Well, I threw that out there. We can in a little bit. There's an article.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. You want to say?
Speaking of that, I would ask your listening audience to go in. I heard a snippet. I got an email the other day, Don. Some guy sent me the snippet from YouTube on a caller called in to Art Bell on the George on the you know, what do you call it? That show George Norrie.
Coast to Coast.
Yes. Coast. Yeah. And he was talking, and this guy was from Area 51. And as long as you're on the subject of reptilians, and it's a clip about a minute and a half long, and I invite the listening audience to go in and listen to it. It's actually a curdling call, because it's scary. It's downright scary. This guy acted like he was paranoid. He was about ready to have a nervous breakdown. He sounded genuine. I mean, it's very difficult to act like this. It sounded true to me. And he was talking about the agenda that was being carried out behind the scenes in Area 51 and what they weren't telling people. And about halfway into the conversation, it got cut off. The whole radio station went down. So that's an interesting snippet. But go ahead, talk about reptilians if you want. I'm all ears.
Okay, well, I was going to mention something, one more thing about Obama before we go into that in more depth. There was a recent article that came out, roughly a week ago. Jeff Rentz had it published on his site by Tom Fife. And Tom had alluded to having been in Russia with another couple, and they were in the couple's home, and they went out to dinner, and, you know, they were friendly with this couple, although the Russian gentleman's wife was not so friendly. And she looked at them as like her opinion of all Americans was that they were very arrogant, and so she was treating them according to her bias feeling about Americans. And she said, well, you Americans are so arrogant and haughty, and you think that you're the saviors of the world, and you're causing destruction all around the world, and you had the opportunity to vote an American woman into the presidency a number of years ago, and you didn't do it. Now, this conversation supposedly took place, I think, around 1980. And she alluded to the fact that there was a man being prepared to take the White House. She didn't say exactly when it was going to occur, but she said his name is Barack, and he's being trained by the Russians, and he's going to introduce communism into the United States. It's a very revealing article. I found it quite interesting because everything that I've uncovered, everything that I've seen Jerome Corsi has uncovered, let's not leave out Webster Tarpley, because he has been brilliant in his assessment of who Obama's handlers are and what his political ideology is on a global scale. And then Andy Martin, who has just decided to file this lawsuit in Hawaii over the issue of the certificate of live birth. And Phil Berg also. So let's give all those gentlemen credit. It's interesting after the fact that this comes out, this article comes out, and it's relating to something that happened 28 years ago. Now, 28 years ago, Obama, who keeps calling himself or claiming that he's 48, is only 47. He just turned 47 in August, if that is his real birth date. August the 4th, 1961. So when he was 19 years old, it was determined that he was, by this Russian lady, going to be the president of the United States and that he was going to be a communist. It so happens that same year is the first time, and I uncovered this, that he had been to Kenya the first time in 1980. Other than if he was born there, this first time there was 1961, not 1987, as he has claimed. And his so-called grandmother, Kezia, in an interview with the, I think it was Mail Online, it's called, she did an interview with them earlier this year, and she stated that she met Stanley Ann Dunham numerous times throughout her lifetime. She died of breast cancer, although Barack says she died of ovarian cancer. And she said that Barack was there in 1985, first met the family in 1985. He claims he never met his brother David, yet David died in 1987. So the dates consistently don't work out. The purpose of what he has been set up for has, in another dimension, been revealed. And it belies his own words. Everything he has written or everything that has been written about him has been a lie. That is the Hegelian dialectic in full swing. Problem, reaction, solution. Over and over and over again. And so I just want to underscore that type of character, that a fictitious character like that has to be invented, means that he is someone other than who he has been presented to be. Totally. Not even a human being. Not even a human being like you or me or anyone in our listening audience outside of any reptilians that may be listening in.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up the exposed in another dimension. And, you know, the first thought that came to my mind goes all the way back to World War II, and even prior to that, with the, what is it, the Thule Society?
Thule Society.
The Thule Society, which they were experimenting with, or they were actively pursuing bringing in beings from another dimension to control or manipulate or actually, you know, take over the body of influential politicians or high-level government officials.
Yes. Now, this goes back. This is interesting. I've been very recently been doing some research in this area.
Oh, goody. I couldn't wait to get here. Go ahead.
The Thule Society, which is German, and it's the metaphysical society of Germany, you could say, that was the MO for the Nazi Party's metaphysical dabbling in Satanism or mysticism or occultism, but in the negative sense. We're not talking about anything holistic here. We're talking about symbology, numerology, and all the evil experimentation they did was to try to combine the negative aspect of the spirit world onto the God side of what's happening here. Everything they did, the murder and the vile laboratory experiments that they did with people, much of what we never heard anything about was orchestrated or was born out of the Thule Society. It goes back hundreds and hundreds of years, almost thousands of years. It goes back into Mongolia, and it goes back into Tibet. Now, in Tibet, they were known as the Thules, or the T-U-L-E's, take the H out. The Germans spell it with an H, T-H-U-L-E, or the Thulas. And those were the Tibetan monks. They come from called Mon, or M-O-N, Mon. And you find the word Mon in Mongolia and Montauk, just as an example. I'll stop right there. Now, Mongolia was, under Genghis Khan, was one of the largest empires in the world. It was not quite as large as the empire that Alexander the Great had created. What was it, 327 BC, something like that. This is in the year, probably in the year 400 AD, that Genghis Khan was making his moves, and he had moved all the way to Europe, Eastern Europe, and controlled all of Asia, basically, particularly Southeast Asia, we'll say. The Mongols actually are related, or it's been determined that they were the Tibetans, and the Nazis were very interested in the Tibetans, and the Tibetans, according to much of the metaphysical literature that's been published, are actually either the reptilians or under the influence of the reptilians. Those are the highest mountains in the whole world in that region. You had Shangri-La, you had all these anomalies that could have been entrances to the inner earth, where you're up in the mountains and you're in blizzard conditions, and you come down to the bottom of the mountain and it's lush vegetation, greenery, tropical temperatures, and lots of anomalies like the Yeti, which is known as Bigfoot here. So there's lots of very, very anomalous, topics that align with this, but they were known to be multidimensional manipulators. In other words, they could manipulate consciousness, they could transcend the normal three-dimensional abilities of a human being, and quite likely they were either reptilians or related somehow, being taught or communicating with the reptilians. Now, the reptilians, when they came to the earth, established a series of pyramids, and we're taught constantly about the pyramids in Egypt at Giza. Yet the Chinese had a pyramid that was larger and equidistant from the pyramids in Egypt. And they've kept this pyramid a secret, that this may be the original first pyramid on the earth. The Chinese have also been very heavily into the same metaphysical sciences. They said that recently in this area, in this particular area of Mon, which is in Mongolia, what we know as Mongolia, that there are children that are exhibiting psychic abilities, newborn kids, we're talking about a current generation, that are beyond the capacities of anything they've ever seen. Just totally mind-blowing. Every aspect, where they can stare at a glass of water and they can fill the glass, or I mean an empty glass, and with their consciousness they can fill the glass up with water. Or move things around at will, just with their thoughts. Now, there are adepts that can learn how to do that, but these kids are being born with these abilities. And there is a, again, it's assumed that there's a, an astronomical link to some other aspect of society. Genghis Khan himself had a blood clot that they claimed was an indication that he was from Mars, or he was associated with Mars, the war planet, the red planet. Isn't it funny that the Chinese are referred to by Western society as the Reds? So we have all these metaphysical connections, or these esoteric connections, with the terminology that also relates to other planets, or inner space travel. And the Tibetans were teaching all of this. The Germans, the Nazis, were actually trying to get their hands on all the knowledge, the metaphysical knowledge that the Tibetans had. And so was the U.S. government. So was Russia. And so you have these countries vying for this power, yet all of them are controlled by reptilians. I would venture to say that we've got 75% of our Congress is reptilian.
Well,
and they're shapeshifters.
I'm assuming by what you've just said that the Thule Society evidently succeeded then in bringing these entities out of one dimension into another and possessing or controlling, you know, high-level government officials and so forth. And so you're saying that the Thules were related to the reptilians, yes?
Yeah, it's part of that same group, or at least related to those up in Tibet. In other words, there was a connection there.
Now,
they may have just chosen the name because they're following the same path.
Did I also hear you say something about you were relating to Obama and shape-shifting? Now, we've talked about shape-shifting in the past with George H.W. Bush and a few other people that I won't name, but are we saying now that Obama also, have you seen him shape-shift?
Yes, I have a photo. In fact, I got this photo off the internet, and they've used this photo in commercials where they show a clip of the Lolo Satoru family. I don't know if you've seen that photo. They're sitting on a Malaysian wicker chair. Now, I identified it as a Malaysian chair by the woodwork on this chair, and it's very ornate. It's got serpents and demons and dragons on it, on the arms, on the back, backing, and even on the front support. And the seat itself is made out of wicker as well as the back. Now, this photo, was the only photo anyone has seen of Lolo Satoru, Stanley Ann Dunham, Maya Satoru, Obama's so-called baby sister. I wonder how he could, be her brother if he's not born of Stanley Ann. So they're just making these claims that this is a family. They carefully documented photos from childhood of Stanley Ann and then Barack to give these cameo appearances of, oh, here's Barack with his father, here's Barack with his mother, here's Barack with his stepfather, here's Barack with his baby sister. Now, in this photo, which was published on the internet by Obama's people, it's a black and white photo. And as I'm looking at this photo, my listening audience has heard this before, but for the new listeners and for you, Michael, as I'm looking at it, it's as though the photo's talking to me, saying, hey, I'm a color photo. Can't you see that there's a little bit of sepia toning in this, that they haven't removed all of the color? And so I brought it into just a regular photo viewer, okay? And I increased the color level. Now, if it's a black and white photo, doing that will do absolutely nothing to the photo. But the back wall turned tomato red, sort of a dark reddish, more red than orange, but a little bit of an orange tint and a little bit of brown in it. Tomato red is usually what it's called. His shirt, and by moving that one control, the wall turned red, and his shirt, which was a T-shirt, turned yellow with blue stripes. I figured I had a good color balance there, and I began looking at the photo. And I looked at his knees. And his knees, in the black and white photo, looked like he had been banged up in a motorcycle accident, you could say. If you've ever seen anybody's knees after a motorcycle accident, they can be pretty swollen. Or maybe he had a bike accident, I thought, just a regular bicycle. Well, in color, when you increase the zoom and enlarge the photo and then manipulate the photo to where his knees are in the center of the picture and really blow it up wide, you can see he's shape-shifting. You can see the back of his hands look like snake skin, and his arms, all the way up to his T-shirt. Different levels of, and it's not pixelation in this photo. It's that you can see that it's not normal skin. Your eyes then fall upon his chest, where he's wearing a medallion around his neck. The medallion is about positioned about at the sternum, and it's a representation of a gray alien. What a 10-year-old kid would be doing wearing a gray alien medallion, I don't know. But as you zoom in even closer on the what's obviously somebody shape-shifting in this picture, you can see entities. You can see faces. And you can see them on the arms of Lolo Satoru. You can see the same reptilian skin on the thighs and the knees of Stan Lien, who's wearing a skirt. And it's quite obvious that's there. Now, Ken Adachi examined the photo and did basically the same types of crops that I was doing, and he came to the same conclusion, that we're looking at a picture of the reptilian, of a reptilian. To make another point about the photo, I opened the photo. I have a way I can open it with a different type of program, and I can look at the inner content, the actual text of the photo. And I could see the photo had been manipulated three times, and there was a description of what was done. In other words, the color levels, the red, the green, and the blue, were reduced to zero. And a statement was made that now only a few people can see what's in the photo. This is in a forensic examination of the photo. I can do this with any photo.
Now, let me ask you, before you continue, I mean, this photo, you know, you're putting these people together, or they're putting these people together. The photo is cropped. I mean, you know, are they putting these people from a different time and place into the same photo?
No, we're cropping the photo. In other words, we're enlarging. When you enlarge a photo, it takes up more than what you have available on your screen, depending on the size of the computer screen you're using. Mm-hmm. So as we're zooming in, you see less and less of what's on the outer edges of the photo. So when you readjust the positioning of the objects in the photo and put them, what you're studying, in the center, you have a better chance of getting the whole image into view. Okay? So now you're looking at the screen and you're seeing just his knee in the screen. And I can tell you, it doesn't look normal. He's shape-shifting. And I even notice from one period where he's a baby to a little bit older to a little bit older, it looks like a different body every time. It looks like a different person. But because people want to believe in their mind that they're looking at the progression of a child. They don't consider that there are too many anomalies, that the nose goes from thin to wide and back to thin again and then wider. And then you see all throughout all these pictures, you're not looking at a black child. You're looking at a child that has lips like someone from Southeast Asia. And I've had numerous people comment that this is a remarkable deduction that I made off of this photograph, that black people, especially from Africa, do not have purple lips. And Obama has purple lips. Now, that's also found in certain Arab races as well. And I'm not making a racial comment here. I'm talking, this is not a bigotry or a bigoted comment. This is
We're talking about genetics here. Right, okay.
Absolutely. Now, when you see the shape-shifting, you have to ask yourself why someone would turn that photo in a color presentation, why they would turn that to black and white. And it says right in there that why it was done, that only a few people now will see what is in the photo. So it was done intentionally to minimize someone picking up that he's shape-shifting in this photo. It's visible. I saw half of that picture with Stanley Ann and him in this photo on a TV commercial that he was running a couple of days before the election. And I thought, wow, they're using the photo. And I looked at his knee, and you can see it in black and white as well, especially when it takes up your TV screen. You can see it's very abnormal. It looks like a cancer. That's how pronounced it is. Okay, a cancer that's visible on the outside.
Well, that's amazing. I want to take you back, though. You had mentioned a few minutes ago, you related to, we were talking about the Tool Society, and you'd said something about 400, goes back to about 400 A.D. Now, interestingly, I went down to the Blockbuster video, and I'm always looking for these 99-cent videos to rent because I'm cheap. And I rented a video yesterday called 300 Spartans, and it's an old movie. It had Richard Egan in it. I think he was a star back in the 50s or something like that. But if my memory serves me correctly, the Persians were attempting to invade Greece right around that time. And supposedly, and there's been two movies made about this. One was made back in the 50s. Another one was made just recently, I believe in 2006, about these 300 Spartans. And these guys held off the Persian army almost like the Alamo. They hold them off for days, and they invoked fear into this Persian army that outnumbered them 20 to 1. They continually kept beating these 300 guys kept beating back this army of 20,000 Persians for days and days and days, and they finally tricked them. But that being said, is it possible that these Spartans had acquired or had been introduced to, some kind of a extraterrestrial or interdimensional or superhuman strength somehow, because the Persians were absolutely terrified of these guys?
Well, if you look at the Greek palaces, the Parthenon and the Acropolis and all of these things, the writings, now Zechariah Sitchin alluded to this, and the Anunnaki claim in any of the works where anyone's read anything supposedly channeled from Anu that their temples were their hotels, that these things that are called relics of antiquity, the ruins of all these cities, are the abandoned buildings that were built. Why would someone need such large ceilings or large areas, from floor to the rooftops? Why would they need that? Now, there was a character in, I mentioned Manguk, I think was his name, and he was over 7 feet tall, which in those days was considered phenomenal. Now, nowadays, it's because of genetic manipulation that people are appearing taller. And, of course, in those days, they didn't have basketball, so they didn't need seven-foot-tall people. but just a little joke there.
Yes, okay.
But for that time period, and 7 feet tall is really not tall at all when you read some of the other accounts of people from 13 to 30 feet tall.
Well, and it's interesting you brought that up because I ran across another clip just the other day that I guess these giants of Peru are surfacing again. They're running across all kinds of new findings related to the Nephilim and Anunnaki with different depictions, pictures of, and this goes back to the pyramids, and they've got the writing, you know, in the inscriptions on the walls of these people being giants from anywhere from, you know, 8 feet tall all the way up to, as you said, 30, 40 feet tall. And it's interesting, Don, that this has been downplayed throughout our society and throughout history for that matter, but the facts are the facts, and you know, in their excavations, they have uncovered these. They've uncovered in this 6 minute clip I was watching the other day. They've uncovered giant sea creatures that were literally, you know, 150 feet long. You know, giant skeletons that are 30 and 40 feet tall. And there can be little doubt now that indeed they existed, but the question is, where did they come from?
Mm-hmm.
And so in all of your, you know, research and so forth, I'm sure you're going to expound on where they came from. So enlighten us or me.
Well, are you the host now? Just making sure.
It seems like this happens at least once or twice per show every time I'm on. But go ahead.
That happens when you invite a talk show host onto your show. We both become co-hosts and co-guests. So
I think we ought to put a show together where you and I, you know, you could be Laurel and I'll be Hardy, or you know, Abbott and Costello, one or the other. Go ahead.
Well, many of the if you go by the accounts of many people who describe their contacts with the Greys, they're referred to as being from Zeta Reticuli. There are many species of Greys, and not all Greys are evil. There are actually some taller Greys that are good guys. They're wearing white hats. But the Greys that work for the reptilians are hybrids that they have developed to be basically their servants, their gold miners, their ants, if you want to call them, or their drones.
Hive-minded, yes.
Yes, and they are hive-minded. They do have intelligence. They can be programmed to do things, and they do these things as well as abduct people. They fly ships, and so many of the ships that people are seeing are flown by the Greys. And their taskmasters, the reptilians and the winged reptilians, which are known as the Draconians, which are from the same place. If they're hybrids and they're from Zeta Reticuli, then obviously the reptilians are from there. But they're also located in many other places. This is not just happening on Earth. It's happening on other planets. Now, this is difficult for a lot of people to grasp this because they're just trying to deal with the reality of the political issues we've been discussing, that why would these people lie? I mean, we've been promised change. You're in for a big change and a big shock when it's revealed who these people really are.
The Pope has even come out and affirmed that there are people of the stars. That statement was just made, what, in the past year or two, I believe?
Oh, yeah, 6 months or so ago, maybe 8 months ago. I think I was on your show at that time and mentioned it to you, that a Vatican astronomer has come out and said that it's okay that God would forgive someone for believing that there might be people living on Mars. God, why do we need the Pope, the Pope's blessing to hold that, to have that knowledge, really, or just believing in it? I mean,
well, it just lends credibility to it for the dumbed down masses.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's to prepare us either for a false flag event, you know, a mock attack from alien forces in the form of a hologram, or to cover the potential for disclosure. Lots of people have seen reptilians. Many of the women in the sex slave industry, which is also controlled by the politicians and The Illuminati themselves are involved in this, in the abduction of children, in the pedophilia, and the mind control brainwashing, which brings us to Montauk and all of that technology that came out of Montauk. Again, that has a link to this higher knowledge that the Tibetans had about multidimensional consciousness and the affiliation or the proximity to reptilian encampments or let's say like underground bases, underground tunnels. And Tibet is one hell of a place to have underground tunnels. Lobsang T. Rampa wrote, that's his pen name, wrote extensively about that in many of his books. The Third Eye, when he talked about going miles underground in a tunnel and being deprived of his senses so that they could open up his third eye, which was actually done physically with a wooden wedge soaked in herbs. And many of the things he described are coming to pass, too. He was not just psychic. He was used to view the British and other other nationalities that were trying to make overtures with the Tibetans, and they would hide him behind a screen, and he would read the auras of these people and tell whether they were lying. He would give a full report at the end of the meeting and say, you can't trust these people. They were lying. And he was honored for that. So,
yeah, interesting you brought that up because, you know, for the sake of the listening audience who may be a little bit cynical about this, I have, you know, in my not too distant past, run across people who are able to read auras. And I had a lady that I actually sat down with, and she, you know, gave a reading on me. And she told me exactly, you know, not exactly what I was thinking, but what I was all about, if you will, and told me things in my life, not specifics, but things that needed to be corrected based upon the energy that I was giving out and the color patterns that were being given out in my energy field. So, and this goes along with the higher levels of consciousness, which I'm not sure if you've ever told me, Don. Are you able to read auras?
Yes, and in fact, I see him in photographs, too. Now, I don't see him in all photographs, because depending on the quality of the photograph, the lighting, the subject, you can't see him. But I can say that I've seen enough photographs of Barack Obama to say I don't see an aura.
Which means that he's not human?
Is that a human being. They can mimic. Here's the thing about reptilians, for those out there that are wondering. They can mimic our DNA. They can change reality. They're masters of manipulation. And that can be taken literally. They're masters of manipulation. Now, I mentioned some of the girls in the sex slave industry because they've turned it into that. They control people in the media. They control entertainers, movie stars, musicians. Neil Diamond is one that's been written about quite extensively by Susan Ford under the pen name Bryce Taylor in her book, Thanks for the Memories. Her handler was Bob Hope. And Bob Hope's handler was Henry Kissinger. And she actually reported to Bob Hope. He would have his way with her and then take her to whoever the victim was. And I say victim because these people were all under mind control. She would have trysts with Bill and Hillary Clinton at the same time, or one with Neil Diamond, or Ronald Reagan. She described in great detail all these things. And what she describes fits perfectly with what Kathy O'Brien and Arizona Wilder and Cisco Wheeler describe. And they all describe having had sex with George H.W. Bush, and he turned into a reptilian in front of their eyes. In other words, he's shape-shifted.
Right, and I've read Kathy O'Brien's book, Transformation of America, in which she depicted that her daughter was abused by George H.W. Bush, and they used these, Disney characters and fantasy, you know, Alice in Wonderland type stuff. Mr. Rogers was a favorite of George H.W. Bush. Welcome to his neighborhood. where he abused Kathy O'Brien's daughter. So, and what's even further, what's even more interesting about this is these people, some of these people come from different times, dates, places, different walks of life, didn't even know each other, yet they come forth with the same stories about the same people. And in Kathy O'Brien's book, Transformation of America, she depicts, I believe she depicts Neil Diamond. Also, some of the people that are being handled or manipulated, for example, Barbara Mandrell, the Mandrell sisters.
And Barbara Streisand.
yes, I mean, so it goes on and on. And some of the people that are interrelated with this, Tommy Lasorda, Los Angeles Dodgers, was a handler, not being handled. These people are all in a clique. There are many celebrities, sports stars, actors, and so forth. Chris Christopherson is one name that comes up that Kathy O'Brien depicted as being part of a CIA operative in this same venue. And I'd have to go back and look in the book to see some of them. But I was absolutely astounded, Don, at some of the names that were being relayed through her book about these people who you know, we're involved in this, because you'd never think on the surface, of course, us just being spectators, you know, paying our ticket, going to a concert, we would never know what was happening behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. I had, I spoke about this on another show, too. I don't know if I ever told you this, so if I did, stop me, and then I'll stop in the middle of the story. not fair to the listeners that haven't heard it.
Oh, go ahead.
There is a scientist, it was up in his years, I would say he was in his early 80s, if not mid-80s, had come up with a free energy type of technology, and had made an overture to Pat Robertson, the TV evangelist, and had made arrangements to travel to Virginia Beach to meet with him, and they met at a restaurant. And this elderly gentleman, the scientist, went with a couple, a man and a woman. And when they got to the restaurant, Robertson asked if they could have 15 minutes alone before the couple joined them. And they were going to go over all his drawings and his business plan and the general description of this technology. And if, under the assumption that if Robertson's people liked this invention, they would invest money into it, get it off the ground, and become a part of it. Well, you know, on a business level. So they went into the restaurant. They ordered coffee. As the gentleman is listening to Pat Robertson talk about what, while he's reading this, he's talking to him. Gentleman pours some cream in his coffee, stirs his coffee, takes a sip, looks up at Pat Robertson, and Pat Robertson all of a sudden is a reptilian. And everything in the rest of the restaurant becomes a blur. He can't see the other people. He knows there were people there in the restaurant because they were there a moment before, but he can't see them. And all he can see is Pat Robertson. And he looks back down at his cup of coffee, and he stirs it a little bit, and he takes another sip, and he looks up, and Pat Robertson says, "We're very interested. Yes, we want to offer this, or we want to buy this technology and offer you maybe a royalty and some cash up front. But we like this very much." And they're having a general conversation about it, and he's not committing himself to this agreement. He's wrestling with what he's seeing, that Pat Robertson is still a reptilian every time he looks up from his cup of coffee, and everything in the rest of the room is a blur. And at the conclusion of this 15-minute meeting, Robertson says, "Well, you can go invite your friends in, and we'll order something to eat. I'm going to go use the men's room, and I'll be right back." And he stands up, and then all of a sudden, it's as if a switch was thrown. The guy can, again, see everybody in the restaurant. Robertson goes to the restroom. He goes outside, and he says, well, they asked him, "How did it go?" And he said, "Well, he's very interested, but I didn't commit to anything, and I'll explain why later on." He said, "But you know, you can only cover so much in a 15-minute meeting." And they said, "What do you mean, 15 minutes? We've been out here for 2 hours." So he totally lost all reality during that meeting.
Now, let me ask you a question. From your perspective or what you know, did Pat Robertson know that he was seeing him as he ultimately or supposedly was in his reptilian light?
Absolutely. He was the one controlling the whole situation, you see. He was controlling the reality. This is what reptilians can do, is they can control our perceptions and our reality. And they can mimic our DNA, and that's how they can take on this human-like form. But you can see in videos, and you can see in photographs, or in real time, if you're close to one, there are different ways to identify them. You can identify them through the voice. You can, there's a certain gravelly sound that certain, let's say TV anchors or radio anchors have. Some have excellent voices for radio or TV, but there's a certain quality to the voice, and it's almost a rough sound or a cracking sound. You can watch their eyelids. Sometimes you'll see two sets of eyelids or very rapid blinking. And I see this in some individuals that are on TV on a regular basis. You watch the guy that can, who's the spokesman for the Democratic Party, Robert Zimmerman, who's always on Wolf Blitzer's shows, or he'll be on with Lou Dobbs. He blinks very, very rapidly. And this is a trait that many people have seen in other politicians. So it's not just me that's seeing this. Also the flicking of the tongue like a lizard or a chameleon. I refer to a video. This was when Dr. Len Horowitz was on my show a couple of weeks ago. I said, this video with Larry King and Mitt Romney looked like two guys competing for fruit flies. And I don't know how else to describe it, you know, because, you know, fruit flies are very small unless you're zoomed in really close. To their faces, you can't see them. So you could only assume that that's what was going on. Their tongues were shooting out, and really people don't pay attention. But if you look at this carefully in the video, the live video or the reruns, you can see this. And if you pause, if you videotape it and pause your recorder or your player, you can see frame by frame, the tongue shooting out very rapidly within a frame and coming back into the mouth. It's not normal. Most people don't do that.
Is Dr. Len Horowitz on board with this anomaly?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so I guess I'm going to have to start paying close attention because I've seen, you know, I've watched some of the clips, and some of them, you know, some of them are very, very persuasive. Other ones are pretty, you know, ridiculous. Mm-hmm. However, I have seen, there is a clip, Brandon Corey story.
Yes, I was going to bring that up earlier, yes.
Yeah, which I've seen, which is very, very, it's disconcerting. It's very shocking. Scary.
Yeah. Now the vertical slits in the eyes is another, and that's featured in that movie. You can see that.
Mm-hmm. But through that, and for the sake of the listening audience, I would say go in and just, you know, Google or Scroogle the Brandon Corey story and watch it for yourself, because a lot of the events that happened throughout that were documented. The house burning down, I believe, and some news reports, and I believe some of the police officers that went quiet and would not speak about anything. It ties in and makes it a very believable story. So it's very hard to discredit what happened there.
Yeah.
And as you walk through that video and you see what happens to this gentleman, is very, very it's a very uncomfortable feeling that you come away with after watching this.
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, you know, it's not that we're fear-mongering here. We're identifying it. And then this is, what do they do when people talk about these topics, any of these topics that we've discussed tonight? They attack the messenger, then they attack the message, and then they spend the rest of their time trying to cover it up.
Or live in denial about it. And as I said earlier in the program, Don, in speaking to a few people, you know, you bring anything up that's even remotely related to any of this stuff, whether it be, you know, reptilians, which I don't even talk about, or 9/11 or any of this stuff, you notice the demeanor in the individual change, and they're looking for a way out. They're looking for a way to gracefully exit the conversation because they cannot deal with it. When the comment was made to me today about, I like Rahm Emanuel. Well, you know, you start questioning somebody about, well, why do you like? They don't know. They haven't got an answer. And so they realize that they're about to be cornered or trapped into, you know, coming off with some kind of a cockamamie excuse, and they have to politely and conveniently exit the situation. And this is part of what's wrong. This is part of the propaganda, the mesmerization, the hypnotization of this society, is that they need to break through and see that reality is far more than the illusion in which they live.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot more going on. See, they're looking inside the box at the inside of the box, really, and denying what they see inside the box. It's when you step outside the box that you see this, and it's something that's happened. Why is it so easy for people to accept seeing this in a movie? Is it because they've been taught that movies are fiction? Is it just because they put that label on it? This is fiction. So you're not supposed to think that this could be real.
That subject content creates fear, and fear paralyzes people.
Absolutely, sure.
And so they live in their comfortable little bubble, and you don't want to poke a pin in that bubble, or it might burst. Because remember, Don, to do that and for them to think analytically or objectively, now it shifts their entire paradigm and they have to deal with it. And it's easier to not deal with it. And it's almost a form of an infant-like stage. The government is your parent, if you will. And as long as you do what you're told, everything will be fine. And this goes along with the premise and the belief of the government being, you know, a benevolent entity, of which we know it's not. And so this is a hard road to hoe in convincing people, because they've done a very good job all throughout their life of propagandizing people into thinking that this government is benevolent. And as you say, you know, you start digging down, going down the rabbit hole, if you will, and starting to realize who these people are or who's controlling or what is controlling them. And you realize that nothing is as it seems. The world in which these people live is indeed the illusion. The reality is where we live. And I fight this, you know, dilemma all the time of inviting people into this reality, of which is a nightmare, of which you can no longer wake up.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing here. What comes to mind while you were talking just now is that Obama has been described by many as a messiah. Would you ever, in your wildest dreams, call any president of the United States that we've had in the past, including the one we have now, well, let's just go up to 43, any of the first 43 presidents, were any of them anything like a messiah?
An emphatic no.
Okay. So we could assume out of the 43 presidents that we had, I'm not talking about the ones under the Articles of Confederation, which I think there were 18 terms under that. So, you know, we've been lied to by history and throughout our historical education in school that George Washington was the first president. But if you just take those 43 under the U.S. Constitution and assume none or agree that none would ever be called a messiah or a savior, why would you assume that the 44th would be a messiah?
Again, it's a creation of a myth. It's propaganda.
Yes.
It's supplanting a subconscious thought in the minds of the masses to get them to go along with the agenda. They have to create this illusion in order to succeed in their objective. Go ahead.
Yeah, so would you agree then that it's indicative of the devolution of human consciousness in the United States of America?
Oh, the dumbing down of America. There's no question about that, Don. And that's the real scary part, is that people have regressed into this inability to analyze, to be free thinkers, to relate to and assimilate, facts to make a rational decision. They have become mentally lazy, almost to the point of incompetence. And again, it's people look for the path of least resistance, and the easy way out is to let somebody else do it, to vote in somebody, believe what they say, and hope for the best, because that means that they don't have to react, they don't have to act for themselves.
Yeah.
And this is the cancer that is eating this society.
Now, the excuse, and I've heard people say, oh, it would be a travesty if it was found out that Barack Obama was not an American citizen, if the Supreme Court decided that they had to nullify this election and we had to do this all over again. Isn't that what a free society is all about? And I can guarantee you that if it doesn't turn out that way, that we will not have a free society any longer. What little bit of freedom there is right now at this very moment will evaporate with that decision. And that is something really to be concerned about. That is a reason to wake up and do something.
But again, Don, you have to remember they've done an excellent job, very cleverly, of distractions, entertainment. I've found myself going along this path of actually being disgusted when I sit down and I'm listening to somebody talk about this newest, program that came on TV. I don't remember what the subject content is now, but it's all just distraction. And I'm not saying it's not good to be distracted once in a while. We're all guilty of that. I took a sabbatical off the air for a couple of months, and it was a welcome sabbatical. I go back on the air Saturday night. But the fact of the matter is that there's a fine line that we walk here, and it's very easy, even for me, knowing what I know, to be lulled into this false sense of security of which, everything might just be okay. No, everything isn't okay. They are succeeding at great lengths with their agenda, and we do have to continue this battle of waking people up, whether we like it or not. Regardless of how many stones are thrown at us, regardless of how we're ostracized or vilified or attacked, which, by the way, I'm being attacked right now, verbally. I'm being libeled on the Internet. I don't know whether you're aware of that.
No, I'm not.
This same gentleman that has been attacking Janet Phelan and Barbara Hartwell is now centered his target on me.
Is his first name Tim?
Yes, that is him. And okay. He is writing some very, very defaming, libelous material on the Internet. It's called COINTELPRO, where they'll take a little snippet of a truth and they'll expound on it, spin it around, and create an enormous lie. And this is what this gentleman is doing to me. And he's taken this long excerpt of which he has wrote, and he has sent it off to many, many talk show hosts on different alternative networks. And, I haven't even addressed it, because it's so preposterous. Any of my listening audience who has listened, has followed my programs, knows that it's preposterous. I'll just give you one snippet. The man says that I hide behind an email address, or not an email address, but a post office box, and I live in a $1 million home in Glendale, Arizona. Now, you know as well as I do that that is absolutely preposterous. The home in which he speaks, if he would have done any research, he would know that the home wasn't worth near $1 million, and it was sold 2.5 years ago. But that's just one example of many, many lies of which he has construed to try to defame and attack me on the Internet he's attacking my credibility. Because, and I look at it this way, it's a blessing, because I must be over the target. I must be stepping on some toes and hitting people where they live, or they wouldn't be going to such great efforts to demean me.
Yeah, well, there's a whole team of these operatives that operate on the internet, and I would refer you to Ken Adachi's site to read up on anything if you want to see other examples of him doing that to other people. So,
Tim White?
Yeah, yeah.
What is Adachi's website?
Okay, it's educate-yourself.org. They've done the same thing to Ken, too. Ken is obviously over the target as well.
And this is what happens. When we start getting close to the truth and we start exposing these people for who they are and we start turning up the heat on these people, the only thing they can do is attack the messenger. They cannot defend themselves. I have been cordial enough to have people on my show in the past and allow them to share their story with the listening audience, and in turn they will turn around and they will attack me for my cordiality. And this has happened to me, it happened to me recently. This gentleman that's supposedly been, you know, targeted up in Canada, Aaron James.
Oh, I've heard him, yes.
Right, and this is part of what has centered the target of this Tim White upon me, because I did not go along with their cockamamie garbage that they're spewing forth on the airwaves, and since I didn't, and I defended an individual by what she has said, now they've come after me. So, and that's okay, that just goes with the territory, but we are on the radar screen because we have a voice. And
I was just listening. I didn't say anything.
I'm getting feedback on my own voice then. But you know, we're being tracked. Our websites are being tracked. I can't speak for everybody, but I'm being hit every day by the feds. And this Tim White gentleman has individuals, contacts that are in the enforcement community, FBI or DOJ or whatever, because some of the information he's got his hands on, a citizen couldn't get it. It would have to have been gotten through a government source.
Yeah, many people claim he's a CIA operative, so you can assume that that's probably...
I believe he's a stoolie. I believe he's an informant. I believe that I know he went to prison, and his prison stay was cut short. I believe I'm not sure about this. I think it was a 10-year term that was cut short to 4 months. He mysteriously walked out of prison, and I believe that he traded off an agreement to, you know, give up information and be an informant for some of these corrupt officials in turn for his freedom. I think that's what happened. And it's not just me. He's doing this to a lot of people. But this gentleman has libeled many people, and he better be careful about what he's doing, because I'll tell you what, if this guy's got any assets and I find out where they are, I'm going after him. Because some of the stuff is, you know, for the people that know me, for the people who've listened to my programs, they could read what he says and they know it's BS. Mm-hmm. But for somebody that doesn't know me, a listener that comes on that is cynical or skeptical and is listening and they don't want to believe it, but they're getting sucked into it, they could use that kind of thing and say, oh, I don't want to listen to this guy because he did this, that, or the other thing. And it's all, you know, poppycock.
Yeah, and then it snowballs, you know. And
right,
it's,
right,
that's
right,
what, that's,
right.
That's what they're after. That's what they want to do. But the bottom line is, you know, you just stick to the truth, and it works itself out.
Oh yeah, the in doing this, he's exposed himself, and it's his credibility that's in the toilet. I've got a program coming up Saturday night, of which I'm going to have one of these ladies on my program, and I'm just very curious to find out if this gentleman has the nerve to call into my show.
Well, you want to give your information out about the radio show time and.
Yeah, it'll air from 4 to 6 p.m. Central Time Saturday and Sunday. I'm on Saturdays and Sundays from 4 to 6 Central Time. OracleBroadcasting.com Or you can, if my son has this done, and he's supposed to have it done by the weekend, my new website will be up, and you'll be able to stream it right from my website, theamericanawakening.org. So you can listen to it either way. But it'll be a good show. The show this Saturday night is on COINTELPRO operations. And should be a very, very interesting, enlightening program.
Okay, very good. Well, we've covered the whole gamut here. I always give you an opportunity to make a closing comment, and I don't even know if you prepared anything. You usually speak from your heart, so why don't you share what you'd like the listening audience to be thinking about?
Well, mainly, and this is what I've learned just in the I've affirmed in the last 2 weeks of just coming back to Arizona, is look within yourself. I mean, the solutions are there, but the solutions aren't there. Don't count on any of these politicians, any of these elected officials to help you. Just like I said in the loan modification things, rely on yourself. Get creative. Start looking for ways that we as individuals, we as citizens, can take steps and move forward into making a better society, into awakening people, into helping our neighbors in their plight and their peril of losing their jobs and losing their homes and having the inability to pay their bills. I mean, it's the Christian thing to do.
And losing families, too.
Oh, absolutely. Their agenda is to divide and conquer. Our agenda is to come together. And if I leave anybody with anything tonight, that's what I will leave them with, is come together. Love thy neighbor as thyself. I don't mean to go on a pulpit here and start preaching to you, but you'll find that, you know, what you put out in the universe comes back to you. And if you put out love and caring for people, and you're really concerned about a person's well-being, it will pay you back tenfold. And this is why, you know, I've been looking at creating answers not only for my own debacle. As you know, Don, I've been, you know, homeless and basically looking for some direction to head to supply or supplement my income. And in doing so, I found that I can do that by helping other people to help themselves. And this is what we all need to do. And by doing that, those other people that are looking to suck on us, okay, politicians, how does that go? They're bloodsuckers. They suck the life out of us. They suck the taxes out of us. They suck the lifeblood out of us. Okay? We can get it back. All we have to do is look within and raise your level of consciousness, Don.
Yep. That's been the message here, and that's what we do. So, Michael, thank you for being on the show.
Always a pleasure.
The best of luck with your new show. And I'm going to put you on the spot. Will you come back and keep us apprised of what's going on in the world from your perspective?
Always here. At your beck and call, my friend.
Okay.
All right.
We'll get you scheduled for December then.
All right, very good.
All right. All right. We're going to say goodnight to our listening audience. Special thanks go out to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible and for running the sound this evening. Great job, Don. And Seth is... evidently got the holiday off, so Seth, if you're listening, come back to work. Quit being lazy. And to the listening audience, I want to wish everyone who is, well, now I guess we're all out of Thanksgiving wishes, but wish you a great rest of the week. Tune in tomorrow night for scientist, inventor, teacher, author, and lecturer Jim Murray. We're going to be discussing some really interesting things that sort of branch out from what we've discussed tonight. You don't want to miss tomorrow night's show. In the meantime, I wish all the listening audience a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.